great to be back with you here on Coco Radio, where we go behind the scenes with leading macOS 10 developers around the world. This is episode 2 of interviews from the floor at Macworld in San Francisco last week, where I had the good fortune to meet many a Mac developer, and I have about 10 total interviews for you. This is the second one, ready to post from John Fox, the developer behind Memory Miner, the app that won the Best of Show this year by Macworld. You got to get a copy of it, memoryminer.com. He's getting some rave reviews out there. Check out his links. And he's got a show special, I think about $45, so be sure and check it out. Well, I've got some good news to share, guys. I just discovered this last weekend that Coco Radio ranks 68 in the technology category of podcast on the iTunes Music Store. I was pretty excited to see the swanky little Coco Radio logo there, just scrolling through the list, and said, wow, number 68. I look at the ones above it, and I go, wow, those are some really good shows. Not really any chance of knocking off Leo Laporte and his Twitch show This Week in Technology, which I happen to like quite a bit. But I think there's, got me thinking, there's probably thousands and thousands of others who have yet to hear about Coco Radio, be it a Windows developer sitting next to you at work, a friend who just got their certificate for Java development, or someone who works at Apple. Or maybe you work at Apple. So please help spread the word, and let's turn more and more people on to the beauty of Coco apps. And lastly, before we dive in with John, I just wanted to say thanks again for the donations that have rolled in and remind you that there is a PayPal donate button on CocoRadio.com if you are so inclined. So here we go.
Well, guys, we're back on the air here at Macworld with GroupSmart CEO John Fox. He's got a great new product here called Memory Miner. We'd like to tell you a bit about it.
Hi. So, yeah, it's a brand new application. It's a tool for digital storytellers. It's a tool that takes old photographs and documents and digital photos and documents and treats each one as a kind of an element in a storyboard. So the fundamental idea behind is how can you link photos and audio and other types of media in order to create a coherent story, and how can you then export that and put that out across the network and create a kind of a marketplace for people to share these story elements. And you know, part of the idea behind it was, you know, having spent 10 years, you know, writing big digital asset management software for, you know, commercial companies like Sony Pictures or Martha Stewart or, you know, Harvard Business School. And that was a former company I had called Webware that I was the co-founder of. And that was an old, you know, web objects shop. And then, you know, one of the things that we worked on was this book called America 24/7, where we provided the dam system that made that book possible. So I don't know if you're familiar with that book project, but it was the idea was that they sent, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning photographers out to every state in America to kind of capture the time.
And what kind of volume of pictures are we talking about on a project like that?
That was hundreds and hundreds of thousands of photos. And that was basically then of the professionals. And then they opened it up via Snapfish to have amateurs submit it. So that was kind of interesting because it was from the first time kind of from a ground up recounting of the society and culture.
It seems like the individuals now with iPhoto are amassing hundreds of thousands of photos now, and with the new 250,000 photo cap in iPhoto, seems like individuals now want to do same sorts of things.
Right, and I think that it's kind of what people are finding is that they're wanting to get back to the reason why people take photos in the first place. I mean, particularly old photos, the rarer things they are, the issue is that you have a limited number of photos that you have about your grandfather. Like, for instance, there's thousands of photos, hundreds of thousands of photos of me and my kids in the modern era, maybe a couple hundred of my mom, and just, like, very, very few of my grandfather. And so, when you have just so few documents to be able to kind of get an idea about their life and how their life kind of reflected the society and culture and the times, there, you have to really do a lot to be able to get the most out of it, to be able to build these links between the photos by people, places, and time, to be able to do annotations, to be able to link them together, and to do that with the idea of telling stories. And that's really kind of what we're interested in. So it's not a replacement for iPhoto. We're not trying to say that, it's something that's a great add-on for that and does some really interesting stuff.
I get the general gist of the application. I certainly took a tour of it before Macworld when you were on your way back to San Francisco. But tell me a bit about what's behind it. The code, and obviously you're leveraging iPhoto.
Yeah. Well, basically, it's a modern Coco app. People have asked, it doesn't use core data. It actually uses data crux. And that was for a couple of reasons. One is that we wanted to be able to make it run on Panther because we have some educational customers that haven't upgraded. And also because we needed some specific control about how to deal with really efficiently with large volumes of data. And so we ended up doing some tricks that were available in WebObjects and EOF that aren't available in core data. And so we were able to have that control. Other than that, the way it works is it links with an iPhoto library, but it doesn't require you to have iPhoto. You can drag and drop photos from anywhere and any source, and they don't even have to be online. So it's just that iPhotos, that almost everybody has it and uses it.
What unique challenges has this development process presented to you?
There's never enough hours in the day.
And how many guys are working on it?
I'm the principal author, and I have two other people who have been helping with engineering work and UI design. And there's actually somebody who's working on a Windows version.
And where are you in terms of your release cycle?
We just released it yesterday, 1.0.
So 1.0.
Yep.
We got a fantastic looking icon here and UI design. Did you distribute out the development of that?
Actually, that's Bobby Anderson. And so he's another great, really, one of these great talented kids out there in the world. And he worked on the app icon. I think he's a stunning job.
That's awesome. Walk us through a bit of the UI here and tell us how you came about the design of it.
Yeah, the first thing is that, we wanted to use familiar metaphors. So, I mean, everybody's kind of, understands the notions of a contact sheet, for instance. So, you asked about one of the challenges. It took a lot of time to be able to get a scalable thumbnail contact sheet that is, equivalent in performance to iPhoto. So we spent...
They've spent a whole lot of time getting that to work quickly.
Oh, yeah. We had tried many different designs. We finally, I think, nailed it. I think it's really performant. And so the other thing that we tried to do is, how can we make... It's not so much a question of searching, but how do you browse and how do you traverse? Because with Spotlight, you can find anything. With Google, you can find anything. That's not really the issue. It's how are things linked in a coherent way? So that's why we turn to a very simple metaphor, people, places, and time.
Let's say I do have 100,000 photos in iPhoto, and I've got this album called, Import from Mom's Albums that I either paid to have scanned in or actually did them by hand. And I've got, say, 1,000 pictures from childhood and black and whites of grandparents. Do I then drag these into your interface?
You drag and drop from any source. So if you're in iPhoto, you can drag from the iPhoto window. You can also, you can drag from the Finder. You can drag from iView Media Photo. Any place that, we do all the normal Cocoa things. You can drag and drop from anywhere into the application. You can also drag and drop out of the application.
But you're not copying the actual picture into your app.
No, not at all. We're making a database reference, and we're doing a checksum, so we know that uniquely identified. So that way, you can eliminate duplicates, and you don't, import the same file twice. And so when we the files live where they are, we copy over thumbnails if they've already been generated, or we generate our own if we need to. And that's how we kind of give you the best of both worlds. You don't have to keep all the photos online. You can keep them on a DVD if you want, but you still always have kind of a representation of them. And if you go to double-click on a photo to edit and it's not there, it will say, hey, please insert DVD marked something. So
I see these three main tabs, photos, people, and places. And I see it looks like a people list populated with pictures. Where do those come from?
So these come from your address book. When you start up the application the first time, it says the person who's logged on it has a last name of, let's say, in this case, Fox. Then it finds all the other people who have the same last name and also looks at each of those address book records for locations. And so then that's how we populate our locations or our places. And it basically has a link to the address book record, but it has its own data store. So that way we have control. So you want to have link to an address book because address book is the place that can tell you their IM address or their email address, for example. But we capture information about the people and link them to each other in our own data store. So, for instance, this is how I can specify that this person is related to me because she's my grandmother. And if we have the birth date, and it automatically sets the gender, and that way allows you to do filtering to say, of the people, I just want friends, or I just want family, or that type of thing. And so then same way, so that we also are able to, integrate with other applications in a nice way that we can say, here's a person icon editor. And this allows you to specify, to edit these icons that are either used in the system or for our life period.
Like you do an IM or something, you say, exactly. Use this picture.
Exactly. And so, and then what you are able to do here is if you look at, we also kind of calculate overlaps or kind of plot where people and places and time intersect. So here I have my grandmother selected, and here in the places, it marks all on a map, all the different locations in the world where you have photos for her. And you can kind of compare and contrast just by moving over here. So this is, this is findings in action, right?
You do anything with the geodata from the photos themselves, from the cameras?
Yeah, so if it's in there, we pull it out. But almost, see, that's the thing. It's having geocodes is unbelievably great, but nobody has them because, I very few cameras have them. And the other thing, too, is what do you do for an analog photo?
So I have an entire legacy of photos that won't have geodata, and you've got a way to address right. that yet in the future. We likely will.
Well, right, exactly. So what you do is here is, again, everybody kind of remembers the address where they grew up, or, you know, I know where I live, I know where I went to school. So, you know, people have a lot of places that are important to them. So what we do is we take that information, and we actually go use Web of Services to download maps and to determine the latitude and longitude.
Why MapQuest?
Well, because they have great maps. We use MapQuest, MSN Maps, and Google. And we have to use all
okay.
And so, and now that Google Earth has come to Mac, is going to offer some new possibilities, we think. So, in fact, actually, you know, one of the things that you can do with the application in the end is it exports a folder with all the media, all the maps, all the attachments, all those things, and including all the URLs. So, like the MapQuest URL, the Google Maps URL. And so, we're delivering these flash skins, which are kind of like mashups, right? Because, you know, lots of people understand how to do things with Flash and reads the XML data and then, you know, presents it there on the web and links it together in some pretty cool ways.
So this thing just screams of web services. What's the plan for the broad web? What's the plan for the broad web here? It's naturally this thing's screaming for to tie into other people.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. So, you know, this is a chicken and egg type of thing. So we have our stated goal to link these things together. So we're developing web services that the key to making web services, or the key to making these big kind of virtual databases, is the quality of the metadata. And so it's not just like pushing it out there on the web and hoping Google finds it. That's not the point. You've got to be able to have high quality metadata. So that's why we take the time, for instance, to do geocodes. Because if you're searching for something and you have something tagged with the word Paris, how do you know it's Paris, France, Paris, Tennessee, Paris Hilton? So, but if you have a precise geocode down to the street level, for example, then you can start to do searching with ranges. So I say, I want this location or within 50 kilometers, or even dates. So we can have dates, you know, with all our photographs, you can enter date components. So just the year, if that's all you know, or the year plus the month or whatever, or the full EXIF date if you had that from a photo. But anyway, so once you have all this data, we're working on a series of web services that consumers of this application can then subscribe to each other. And we do it with a web service so you can have control and security, so that you can basically say, hey, I'm interested in anybody who has media relating to these places and these times, right? And so it's not something you can do quite simply just by publishing something on RSS. You have to be able to find people. So you need a database registry to do the type of mining. So that's the web services that we're working on.
Well, you certainly are passionate about this system here. Were you as passionate about digital asset management?
Sure. I mean, it's you know, here's the thing. It's like, you know, digital asset management is a series of technologies that solve a lot of business problems, and all the technical challenges have been solved. I mean, after 10 years, there's kind of not a whole lot of intellectual headroom to it. The reason I got, you know, into this and why I'm so excited about it is it's very personal to me and very personal to a lot of people. I mean, within a 12-month period, my father died, I got married, and I had a child. So that makes you think a lot about your life and your parents' lives and the people that you grew up with and the places that you were around. And so, you know, this type of application couldn't have been built even a couple of years ago, because you need a kind of confluence of several things. You need, you know, broadband internet. You need, you know, people understanding the idea about a many-to-many, you know, publishing, you know, media sphere, whatever you want to call it. And then, you know, you also need people who to be interested about doing it.
What's your recommended path for people to get traditional printed pictures into their Mac?
I got to say, Epson makes an incredible line of scanners, and this may sound like a shill, but Epson, I think, has really inexpensive scanners. So I did all these with an Epson Perfection scanner, and actually, it's an interesting story.
Like a specific photo scanner that would take a 3x5 or 4x6.
Well, what's nice about that is that they have attachments, so you can do plain photos. They have an inexpensive slide scanner. So I think, as I said, it's, you know, for the quality and price, it's really great. It's not, you know, and there are actually companies that specialize in this that really take, you know, boxes and boxes of old photos and put them on this enormous, you know, flatbed scanner and with the white glove treatment. So that's their batch services out there. But I think the point of it is that, you know, the real treasures, I think, are the things that haven't been made digital yet, and that's the trick. And so part of the reason why people don't do these things is there haven't been really enough interesting applications, I think, to do things with it. And so, as I said, the whole trick, I think, is the way that you link them together and the way that you can export them as stories.
Well, I think you got an incredible product here. It looks real exciting. One last question. Did you consider calling it Delicious Family?
Would I consider calling it a Sleuth Island? No, I don't know. Well, you know, I would say this. You know, having done software development for many, many years, you know, at some point you kind of get a little bored. I mean, I honestly say that when kind of, you know, Apple was never, I was never really particularly interested in what they were doing, even though that was my first computer. I loved it. Having been with Next, you know, writing Next Step software, it was kind of, this was something about how software development should be. And then when it, you know, came to Apple, I kind of got a lot more excited about being able to write software, that, you know, one person could write a software, I think, of pretty serious complexity and quite a bit of refinement in 1 year. But I think the other thing, too, is you know, things came full circle. You know, web applications got people a lot of really excited about a network, but the user experience was always kind of crappy. There's just, you know, despite Ajax, despite, you know, Flash skins, there's a limit to how good it can possibly be. But web services is a way of connecting, you know, media that exists on desktop applications and that are manipulated by really, you know, high performance desktop applications is kind of the best of both worlds. So as a result, I'm like much more excited about where we're going to go with this over the next couple of years than I was, let's say, a couple of years ago, where, you know, it's like, all right, everything that could be done has been done. And
I think it's exciting, you, the guys like you that are coming from that next legacy background, you know, you had a lot of years on your belt as developers, and you're bringing some great things to the platform.
Yeah, well, it's always nice to kind of work with technology before, you know, to have a kind of look at what the future became.
And where do you contribute out to the web for developers and in terms of learning and contributions back to the community?
Yeah, absolutely. Now I'm glad you brought that up, actually. You know, I'm incredibly grateful to, you know, Coco Dev mailing list and people out there in the world that are helping each other. And there's the, you know, the Mac software developer meeting that's happening today. I think, you know, the great opportunity that indie developers have is that we can be incredibly nimble and we can, you know, help each other in getting the apps out there. So, you know, I've done my best to kind of give back to the community in the same things I've gotten. So there have been people who kind of posted saying, hey, I'm a Windows developer, I'm new to Coco, and I do my best to go out of the way to kind of mentor them by IM or answering their emails privately and so on and so forth. You know, I think that the more developers do that and help us get our applications built and the more we cooperate with each other to make our applications share data in useful ways, it's good for the community. And it's also, in a business sense, it's also helps kind of, you know, everybody's kind of concerned. It's like, I build my application, then what happens if Apple comes out and squashes it? And a defense about that is it's not the single application. It's the group of applications working together that makes it more difficult for any single application to kind of displace it, if that makes sense.
Well, tell everybody where to find your app and how much it costs.
Okay, well, the website is www.memoryminer.com. And the application is $60, and there's a show special where you can get it for $45, and anybody on the web can get it. If you go to our website, there's a promo code so that when you go to purchase it from within our software, you can get the discount.
All right, John, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.